Chapter 21. Defiance. They came to another four-way junction.
I hate this place, grumbled Mercutian.
You hate everything,
Sirion replied. He thudded a fist against the side of his head, trying to restart his failing retinal display.
My hololith is still stuttering.
Talos leveled his Blood Angel blade towards the eastern corridor.
This way.
The walls were shaking now. Huron had surely succeeded, stripping Villamus of the power it needed to activate its last outer defenses. The tremors in the air could only be the first wave of dropships coming down, and drop pods hammering through brittle stonework.
Huron will be heading for the Gene Vaults, Mercutian voxed. That won't be a fast fight, but we're still not exactly blessed with an abundance of time.
Talos vaulted a wall of bodies, no doubt left by an eager Corsair Terminator team on their march to the primary Generatorum.
He'll have to smash through 100 Marines errant, the Prophet said. They know why that scarred bastard is here now, and they'll be messing to stop him.
First Claw was doing what they did best whenever a fair fight threatened to engulf them. They were running in the opposite direction. Talos led the pack in their headlong sprint.
He'll divide his forces to split the remaining defenders. If the Marines errant are in this sub-district, the Red Corsairs will be bleeding for every step they take. Some enemies need to be divided before they can be conquered.
Zal laughed.
When did you start paying attention to battle briefings? When there was a chance I'd be caught up in something as foolish as this.
A squad of serfs spilled into the hall from a side chamber ahead. Their tabards displayed the falling star of the Marines errant, and by Talos's reckoning you didn't need to be a prophet to see that was a bad omen. Lasfire slashed past them, into them, leaving ugly charcoal marks on their armor. First Claw didn't even slow down. They blew through the troops like a winter wind, leaving tumbling bodies and severed limbs in their wake. The Angel Blade hissed and spat, its power field incinerating the smears of blood along its length. Each died in a flicker of smoky flame, evaporating to leave the weapon cleansed only seconds after it last took life. Uzas stumbled, slowed, and broke ranks. Talos cursed, looking over his shoulder.
Leave the skulls! He voxed. Skulls! Skulls for the skull throne! Blood for the... Leave the damn skulls!
Uzas complied, dragging himself away from the bodies and sprinting to catch up with his brothers. Perhaps the sense of urgency broke through his maddened perceptions, because Talos doubted his brother had obeyed out of a sudden ability to actually obey orders. Septimus couldn't help it. He could never help it when he sat in this seat, always finding himself grinning like he had as a child. The boy who wanted to be a pilot. Maruk checked his buckles in the co-pilot's throne. He was having a great deal less fun.
You can fly this, right?
Septimus spoke a smooth flow of Nostramon through his boyish smile.
Is that a yes or a no?
Maruk buckled the last strap. Septimus didn't answer. He reached a hand to his earpiece.
Blackened, primed for launch, requesting clearance.
The short-range vox snapped back a crackling reply. Meanwhile, the gunship started to shake in sympathy with its own howling engines. Outside the reinforced window, the hangar was immersed in a concert of commotion, half-blanketed in rippling waves of heat exhaust. Maruk saw servitors staggering clear of the launch deck, loading trucks with empty claws retreating from the grounded flyers, and several Thunderhawks shivering with the whining build-up of their rear boosters. Each of the gunships seemed aggressively avian, unnecessarily so, with their sloping wings and leering noses. Each of them had a beast's wings painted on their hull armor, following the lines of their mechanical pinions. Septimus's craft, blackened, had a crow's skeletal wingspan painted along the sloping metal, reaching to the wingtip gun turrets. In all his life, despite working around finger-chopping, limb-mauling, eardrum-breaking industrial death traps. He'd never seen an angrier-looking machine than a Thunderhawk gunship.
"I'm not in love with flying," he admitted.
Septimus had one gloved hand on the flight stick and the other on one of the many levers spread across the console.
"A strange thing for you to only mention now."
The first gunship rose on a crest of polluted heat shimmer. To Morok's eyes, it was a graceless thing, a metal beast that wobbled in the air, its engines howling too loud. Then came the sonic boom. A flare of white fire left him blinking. A bang that resonated like thunder in a cavern had him flinching, and the gunship tore forwards into the visible slit of space at the hangar's far end. Not graceless at all, he thought. Thrown, these things could move when they wanted.
"Blackened," crackled the Vox. "Good hunting."
Septimus grinned again. The bulkhead opened to reveal three robed serfs. The clenched claw icon of the Red Corsairs stood out in expensive gold thread weave upon their chests. Their hoods were up, but their heads were lowered, bobbing in obsequious respect.
"Greetings, Flayer," the first said. "Welcome to the Venomous Birthright."
Varial had forgone wearing his helm. Despite the innate intimidation it offered, he'd noticed over the years that humans reacted with greater discomfort to his bare face. He believed it was because of his eyes. Eyes as light as polar ice often suggested some inhuman quality in mythological literature. But this was merely a guess. In truth, he'd never been bothered enough to ask.
"Do you know why I am here?" he asked them.
More obsequious bobbing of robed heads.
"I believe so, Lord. The Vox message was corrupted by the storm, but it pertained to the Gene Vaults, did it not?"
"It did," the Flayer nodded. "And time is a commodity I cannot afford to waste," he added.
"We will escort you to the Gene Vaults."
"Thank you," Varial smiled.
It was a gesture no warmer than his eyes, but it got the slaves moving. As they walked through the arched corridors, he noticed how much additional lighting the Tyrant's tech adepts had installed since first claiming the Echo of Damnation. One of the most obvious aspects of its transformation into the Venomous Birthright was the profusion of lamp packs, jury-rigged to the walls and ceilings, casting a harsher illumination than any Eighth Legion warship crew would tolerate. This would be one of the first things Talos would change. He was certain of it. Varial had visited Black Market once, out of idle curiosity. It was all too easy to imagine scavenger packs of those same Night Lord serfs stealing these lights for personal use, trading them, stealing power cells, or simply smashing them out of spite. The hallways were wretchedly filthy, which was no surprise. Varial was long used to the myriad corruptions that took hold in a poorly maintained vessel. The Red Corsairs had owned the Echo of Damnation for 6 years now, and given her plenty of time to fester and grow foul. After they'd been walking for several minutes, Varial calmly drew his bolt pistol and shot all three of his guides from behind. Their robes actually reduced the mess, keeping the exploded gore wrapped up, like wet gruel in a silk sack. He left what remained of the three slaves to twitch and bleed, their ruptured insides slowly soaking through their clothing. A side door slid open, and a uniformed officer peered out.
"My lord?"
Her eyes were wide in alarm.
"What is your rank?" he asked calmly.
"What happened, lord? Are you harmed?"
"What is your rank?" he asked again.
She lifted her gaze from the burst bodies, standing fully in the doorway now. He saw her insignia as she began to answer.
"Lieutenant Tertius, Lord..."
Varial's bolt smacked into the woman's face, blasting the inside of her skull back into the room behind. Her headless body folded with curious tidiness, crumpling in a neat heap, blocking the automated door from sealing closed again. It bumped her thigh repeatedly as Varial walked past. The bridge was a fair distance, and several decks away,
but reaching it would solve everything. What he needed was an officer of rank. These dregs simply wouldn't do. No more than 30 seconds later, after ascending a crew ladder to the next level, he came face to face with an aging man with his hood lowered. The elder's skin was jaundiced, and he reeked of the cancer that was devouring him from within. But he had black eyes, all pupil, lacking an iris.
"My lord?"
the man asked, edging away from the staring warrior.
"Ajisha," said the apothecary.
"Ajisha, Nostramo."
Reuven sent the attendants away with a curt dismissal. While he'd seen many degenerates in worse conditions during his years in service to the War Master, he'd always found Atrigius's servants to be particularly unwholesome things, and their service to the new navigator had changed nothing of his opinion. The chlorine reek of them offended his senses, the way it rose in a miasma from their antiseptic-soaked bandages, as if such trivial protections could ward against the changes of the warp.
"The mistress's chamber,"
they whisper hissed in some bizarre sibilant choir.
"Not for intruders, not for you. Get out of my way, or I will kill you all."
There, it couldn't be stated in plainer terms, could it? He leveled his staff for emphasis. The curved Xenos skull leered down at them. They still didn't move.
"Let him enter,"
came the navigator's voice over the wall vox. Her words were punctuated by the door juddering open on ancient mechanisms clearly in need of oiling. Reuven entered, shoving the slowest ones aside.
"Hello, navigator," he said.
His amiability was so false it almost hurt the teeth to give it voice.
"I require the use of your chamber."
Octavia was retying her dark hair into its usual ponytailed captivity. She didn't meet his eyes.
"It's all yours."
Something growled in the corner of the room. Reuven turned to it, realizing it was not a pile of discarded clothing, after all. A shotgun's barrel and a mutilated face peered out of the ragged heap.
"Please, take your mutant with you,"
Reuven chuckled.
"I will."
Octavia left without another word. Hound followed obediently, his eyeless face turned to Reuven the whole time. Once they were gone, the Night Lord circled her throne, taking note of the blanket covering the psychically sensitive metal frame. Curious now, he lowered himself to press his cheek against the metal armrest. Cold, painfully cold for a human, but hardly fatal. He rose again, his disgust deepening. This female was a lazy, weak-minded creature, and they would be better served without her. To slay her outright would only anger the prophet, but she could be replaced by other means. Reuven had never suffered in guiding vessels through the warp. Sorcery could achieve through strength of will that which a navigator achieved by a twist of genetic fortune. He had no need to see into the warp when he could simply carve a path through it. The throne was too small for him, designed as it was for lesser beings. No matter, the walls were the reason he'd come. Nowhere else on the ship boasted such dense partitions to its surrounding chambers. A warship was not a quiet vessel, but a navigator's chambers were as close to true silence as a soul could find. Reuven sat on the floor, brushing aside more of the navigator's mess. Scrunched parchment pages with unfinished log entries rolled across the decking. He closed his eyes at last and spoke murmured words from a nameless tongue. After only a few syllables, he tasted blood in his mouth. After several sentences, his hearts began to hurt. Witch lightning coiled around his twitching fingers, maggoty crackles of the corpus and stuff squirming over the ceramite. The quicksilver pain running through his blood brought a smile to his serene features. Too many months had passed since he'd been free to work his wonders. The ship's marine spirit sensed his intrusion, reacting with a serpent's suspicion, coiling back into itself. Reuven ignored the artificial soul. He didn't need its compliance or its capitulation. He could drag this vessel through the sea of souls, no matter what resided in the Covenant's beating heart. Doubt's clinging fingers trailed over his skull, but he cast them aside with the same contempt he'd shown the Navigator. To doubt was to die. Mastery of the unseen world required focus above all else. The ship gave a shudder. Instantly he was himself again, seeing nothing more than what his eyes showed before him. And he was breathless, his respiration choppy, his heart's hammering. Perhaps he was weaker than he'd believed, after so long in chains. It was an unpleasant confession, even if only to himself. Reuven gathered his concentration to make a second attempt, and stared at a burning chamber through another warrior's eyes. The marine errant writhed in his grip, held off the ground by the massive clutching claw. Ceramite creaked, then cracked, split by lightning bolt fractures under the talon's pressure. With a grainy laugh, Huron hurled the warrior aside, paying no attention as the errant slid down the stone wall. A bloody smear marked the dead soldier's trail, the inscription on his pauldron etched in ornate high Gothic red, Taras. He had to admire them, though. Their predictability left them vulnerable, yet it also showed their dogged tenacity. With half of his Terminator assault marching to the Gene Vaults, and half besieging the chapter's reclusium, the depleted Villamus garrison cut itself into two even smaller, weaker forces. The reclusium represented the chapter's heart and soul. In the main chapel where the errant's lawmasters had held court for centuries, the chapter's relics were held in the trust of stasis fields. In the gene vaults, a millennium's reserves of gene seed were stored in cryogenically sealed vaults. One target represented the chapter's past, the other its future. Conflicted sergeants led their squads to die at whichever shrine they chose to defend. While the fortress monastery trembled with more red corsairs making planetfall every moment, in the wastelands outside the monastery, the tyrant's warriors assailed the walls with an army of artillery, cracking breaches in the ancient stone for more corsairs to spill inside. Although the halls of Villamus ran red, the fighting was most savage around the corsair elite. Terminator kill teams bulwarked themselves within their objective chambers and refused to give ground. Shrapnel grenades burst at their feet, going completely ignored. Any living being in the enemy's colors that crossed the flagstones ended its existence as a meaty stain on sacred floor, pulled apart by firepower capable of cracking tanks apart. Huron swatted a kneeling serf aside with the flat of his axe, powdering the boy's ribs, sending him skidding away to die in a corner. The amusingly clockwork beat of his rebuilt hearts was a pleasant percussion to the chatter of mass-reactive shellfire. Villamus's reclusium had been an austere, orderly sanctuary, with its relics presented on marble plinths. He paused to examine a time-yellowed scroll, suspended in an anti-gravitic aura. It listed the names of the First Company warriors who died in the Badab War so many centuries ago. Huron's teeth reflected the burning banners on the walls. With a care that bordered on reverence, he turned his palm to the preserved manuscript and discharged a gout of liquid flame. The papyrus dissolved, its edges drifting away on the smoky air. Centuries' worth of gene seed would soon be his. Let the Night Lords flee if they chose. They'd performed their mundane task with enough distinction that the Exalted could be forgiven for its past transgressions. Someone screamed. Huron turned, axe in hand. The heraldic armor of a marine errant was already aflame, and he raised a stolen relic above his head as he charged. Huron caught the hammer's haft with ludicrous ease, intercepting its killing fall.
"Stealing your own hero's relics," he sneered into the burning warrior's faceplate. "You shame your chapter."
Gears in Huron's knees droned as he leveled a kick into the warrior's stomach, sending him sprawling into a clanging heap on the sooty flagstones.
Your brotherhood is about to die, and you profane it.
The errant tried to rise, defiant to the last, reaching for Huron's shin guard with a dagger in his hands. The tyrant caught a momentary glance of the warrior's breastplate, and the name Morthaud inscribed there upon the carved imperial eagle.
Enough!
Huron clutched the thunder hammer in his power claw, the way a man would hold a thin stick. Without activating either weapon, he pounded the maul into the back of the errant's helm, relying on his own strength to do the deed. The sound of a tolling bell rang throughout the chamber. Huron chuckled as he tossed the priceless weapon aside, and Reuven opened his eyes. Varil let the guards salute him.
Flayer, said the first. Welcome, Lord, added the second.
He too had black eyes.
We had received no word of your arrival.
Varil answered as he always answered mortals greeting him, with the barest nod in their direction. Without further ado, he walked onto the strategium, entering through onto the rear concourse. The apothecary took a moment to process the scene. Over 50 human officers working at their various stations, much the same as any of Lord Huron's warships. The captain of the Venomous Birthright, who went by almost 20 irritatingly ostentatious titles, the shortest of which was War Leader Caleb the Chosen, was nowhere to be seen. His absence didn't trouble Varil at all, quite the opposite, in fact. Caleb would surely be leading his company in the assault on Philemis, as the Corsair's battle companies joined up with the Tyrant's advance force. He strode down the angled steps, descending to the main bridge. Mortals saluted as he went, to which he replied with the same customary nod as before. He took care to meet every face that looked his way, seeking pairs of black eyes among the human herd. At least a third of the command crew possessed them. This was going to work. Varil approached the throne itself. With the venomous birthright, the echo of damnation, hailing from an era when the legions commanded all of the Imperium's might, the throne was sized for a legionary. The human commander remained standing by its side, straightening as Varil drew near. His eyes were blue.
Lord Flayer, it is an honor to have you aboard. Our Vox is still crippled. We had no idea it was you on the shuttle.
I do not care. Where is your captain?
War Leader Caleb, scourge of the...
Varil raised a hand.
I desire a new cloak. If you delay answering me each time to list the many titles your master has earned, I will make that garment out of your skin. That is a warning. Please heed it.
The officer swallowed.
Captain Caleb is overseeing the launch, my lord.
And what of his company? The officer broke attention to scratch at the cropped, graying hair by his temple.
The marauders are in the process of full deployment, my lord.
Why have they not deployed already?
I do not know, lord.
Oh, but he did. And Varil saw the lie in his eyes. Caleb was a meticulous bastard, demanding no shortage of pomp and ceremony before every engagement. The apothecary could easily imagine the battle company kneeling in reverence to the true pantheon, while their dropships were prepared and made ready around them, heedless of how their presence slowed the process. When unleashed, the marauders were one of Huron's most fearsome companies. It was why they'd been granted the Echo of Damnation as plunder. They'd been the ones to conquer it. Their presence was going to be a problem. Varil nodded.
I understand, Commander. I am here from the flagship because my message was too precious to entrust to a menial or the whims of flawed Vox. Our situation is grave, Commander. Show me the launch bays.
Grave, Lord?
Show me the launch bays.
The Commander ordered a naval rating to bring a quad-split image of the four launch bays up onto the Oculus. Two stood empty. Two were still in extensive use. Varil saw docked Thunderhawks, cradled land raiders,
and whole squads of Red Corsair warriors ready for embarkation. This will not do at all, he murmured. Too many of his brothers remained on board, far, far too many. Marauder Company wasn't even close to being fully deployed. It could take an hour or more. The Night Lords were preparing for a fight, but this would leave them grievously outnumbered.
Lord,
Varyl turned to the man, slowly.
You know who I am? Varyl asked. Do you not?
Yes, my lord.
Listen well, Commander. I am more than the Flayer, more than the Corpse Master's inheritor, and more than an honored member of Lord Huron's inner circle. When I speak to you now, it is as a ranking member of the chapter, here under the tyrant's authority, empowered to exercise his will.
The officer was getting nervous now. He nodded curtly. Then obey this order without question. Varyl fixed the man's gaze with his own.
Seal both port launch bays at once, establishing bioweapon protocols for containment.
The commander's confusion was apparent. It was apparent for just under 3 seconds, and ended when his face ceased to exist in a clap of detonative thunder. Varyl lowered his pistol and looked at the closest living mortal officer. She looked right back at him. She had eyes for nothing else.
You know who I am, do you not?
The woman saluted, controlling herself admirably.
Yes, Lord.
Then obey this order without question. Seal both port launch bays at once, establishing bioweapon protocols for containment.
She moved to obey, shouldering one of the console officers aside. Her fingers began to hit keys, tip-tapping an override code across the small monitor.
Lord, it requests a code for emergency command clearance.
Varyl dictated a long screed of 101 alphanumeric characters from memory, ending with the words, Identity Varyl, Apothecary Secondus, Astral Claw Chapter. The officer paused at another obstacle.
It requests a further Unicode, Lord.
Frega.
She entered the 5 letters, and sirens began to wail across the ship. As he ran, his boots beat the worthless wasteland soil, unhindered by the thick dust at his ankles. The hovering gunship hurled a sandstorm against his armor, its engines giving an ululating whine as they kept it off the ground. The gritty wind abraded his warplate's paintwork, leaving silver-scratched slices of gunmetal gray showing through the blue. First Claw had emerged from a blast fissure blown in the fortress monastery's outer wall, to be confronted with a battalion of Corsair battle tanks and cargo lifters massing on the desert. Landers and gunships still ferried warriors down from orbit, while drop pods hammered down in staccato thunderclaps, sending arid dust spraying up from their impact craters.
Are they planning to stay here?
Sirion voxed.
They'll strip the fortress bare. With this many of them, it will not take long.
Talos turned away from the dust storm, being dredged up by the landing gunship. Grit still clattered against his armor, but at least his eye lenses were clear now.
Some of these transporters are already lifting siege tanks back into orbit.
With a sigh of contented machinery settling, the gunship's landing claws crunched into the wasteland's skin. Mercutian and Zal were already running aboard.
Lord,
Septimus's voice crackled from the cockpit.
You're the last squad. The Exalted reports that all is ready for your return.
Talos looked back at Villamus. The fortress's towers reached too high to ascertain where they ended and the clouds began. By contrast, its lowest levels were practically aflame, thick smoke bleeding from the shell cracks in the great walls. A victory, but not their victory. This was a game played by another band of traitors, and it had tasted hollow from beginning to end. Uzas remained with him.
Are you ashamed?
He voxed. Talos turned.
What?
Uzes gestured with his axe, aiming it at the fortress.
Are you ashamed to be running from another fight, brother? You shouldn't be. This is meaningless. Our fight is about to begin.
Uzes?
Talos asked.
Brother?
Huh?
You spoke with such clarity. It was good to hear.
Uzes nodded.
Come, prey waits in the heavens. Blood, skulls, and souls.
And our ship.
Huh?
And our ship.
Octavia went to the one place she knew there'd be no one to talk to, while Hound waited outside. She needed sleep, just a few hours maybe, before Talos returned and asked her to take part in the most dangerous and insane night of her life. She'd never been in Septimus's room before. Given how he teased her for her mess, it wasn't as tidy as she'd expected. Mechanical innards and oiled cloths were spread over half the floor, as if he'd been summoned away in the middle of dissecting some unknown machine. A wide workbench stood against one wall, a low bunk against another. Several pairs of boots, one with its lost laces replaced by adhesive tape, were scattered in a tumble under the desk. It smelled of him in the room, though, the rich, oaky incense of cleaning oils, the scent of a man's clean sweat while he worked, the spicy, almost antique smell of well-worn, well-loved leather. Octavia turned one of his parchments over into the light of the workbench lamp. Her own face looked back at her, her own features rendered in charcoal, sketched onto the paper. She wore her bandana, her face tilted slightly to the side, gazing off the page at something unseen. Above the corner of her lips was the little mole her maids had always insisted on calling a beauty mark. She turned another sheet, revealing an unfinished vignette of her throne, with her blankets and a cushion heaped against one side. The third parchment was a self-portrait, rougher than the other sketches, with his augmetic left eye and temple undrawn. The fourth and fifth were both Octavia again, this time wearing a scowl in both images, her eyes narrowed, and her lips between pursing and pouting. She wondered if she really looked like that when she was annoyed. It was a withering look, straight from the wealthy, spoiled halls of aristocratic Terra. The next sheet showed a hand-drawn schematic of a legionary's gauntlet, and the next, a list of words in numbered order, all written in Nostramon. She could read enough to guess it pertained to the gauntlet diagram. She turned the rest one by one, seeing herself several more times. By the end, she was blushing, no longer tired at all, when Hound thumped on the door.
Mistress! Mistress! Wake up! The ship moves! It's time soon!
Captain Caleb Valadin looked up as the sirens began to wail. Hazard lights flashed yellow in their wall mountings. The doors, the accursed doors, slammed closed with brutal finality, trapping over 50 of his men and their war machines in the hangar. Corsairs rose from their knees, their oath-swearing rituals ending with an abruptness born of confusion.
Commander!
Caleb voxed. He expected nothing but static, and his expectations were met. Curse the Vox. Curse the solar storm. Curse the...
Initializing purge in 30 seconds, announced the automated wall speakers.
Every one of his warriors was standing now, their talismans and battle trophies rattling against their armor. The hazard lights flashed brighter. He felt a sickening pull on his attention and turned to face the shielded hangar bay opening. The shield itself was a mellow screen of thin mist, clouding vision just enough to be noticeable. Beyond it, the void, the pinprick multitudes of distant suns, and a crescent slice of the thirsty, lifeless world below. If this was a true purge...
Sir?
Shut your mouth, Caleb snapped. I'm thinking.
Initializing purge in 20 seconds.
Into the gunships, he ordered.
Initializing purge in 10 seconds?
Varial watched the oculus, his gaze flicking between both populated hangars.
See, they are secure within the grounded gunships. All is well.
Inwardly, he was cursing. It had been too much to hope that this would work with such unbelievable ease. But trapping them like this was something, at least. He watched Caleb's armored form sprint up a rising gang ramp and silently wished him an intensely painful demise. The picture was the same in both hangars. The Corsairs reacted with admirable haste, saving themselves. This would be a problem, but one that could be dealt with in the near future.
Initializing purge! Initializing purge!
The void shields covering the yawning hangar bays gave uncoordinated flutters, their radiance dimming. The primary hangar went first, its shield dissipating like engine exhaust in a gale, drifting out into the airless void. The second failed a moment later, repeating the same blown smoke dissolution. Varial watched the air roaring out in great flapping sheets of force, howling silently on the screen, an exhalation into space from lungs that could draw nothing back in. Crates rolled across the deck, spinning and leaping in their rush to fly into the void's gaping maw. Servitors, too brainless to realize the threat to their own lobotomized existences, went next. Dozens remained perfectly still, as they flashed through the air, sucked out into space. Others still attempted to twist and turn as they flew, unable to understand why their limbs wouldn't respond. They mouthed error codes as they failed to attend their duties. Racks of missiles, heavy bolter ammunition, and unattached rocket pods spun and flew free in a near-constant stream. Varial winced as a Hellstrike missile smashed into a wall on its way out. The vehicles were next. The unsecured autoloaders and heavy lifter buggies crashed together and flipped end over end. A land raider in mid-loading slid back with punishing slowness, sparks spattering from its treads as they left grind scars on the decking. When it fell from the hangar at last, it was with a jerking yank, as if some unseen hand finally claimed it as a prize. In all, the vacuum took less than a minute to void both launch decks. The three Thunderhawk gunships remained locked in their racks, filled with warriors Varial had hoped to see die. A similar scene appeared in the other hangar, but for the shuddering, squealing form of one gunship being dragged across the landing pad. Free of its rack, the vacuum had almost taken it before its pilot could fire the engines. Instead, it lay scarred and wounded in the hangar's heart, all three landing claws severed by the strain. Varial turned to the bridge commander.
Illuminate the contamination water beacons. We must ensure none of our sister ships attempt to lend aid until we have the situation under control.
Contamination water's alight, Lord.
The oculus switched to a view of the warship's spine, where miserable pulsing red lights flared along its vertebrae battlements. They put Varial in mind of boils, ready and ripe, in desperate need of supuration.
Bring the ship away from the fleet. High orbit!
He waited, standing by the command throne, watching the sedate drift of stars.
Should we repressurize the launch bays?
No, our warriors are safe for now.
Lord, the 8th Legion warship Covenant of Blood is shadowing us!
The concourse doors opened, before Varial could weave more deception into a plan quickly coming unraveled. A lone red corsair entered, his bolter in his hands, his helm crested by two curving horns of cracked ivory. With a measured tread, he descended to where Varial was standing.
Flayer? Sir, what in the name of unholy piss is going on?
Again the apothecary was denied the chance to answer. One of the console officers called back in a panic.
Lord, the Covenant is launching boarding torpedoes!
Now or never, now or never, now or I die here.
Valmisse, shall Saladan.
He let his voice carry across the bridge.
Flishatha se, shall Voroshika.
The crew looked at one another. A few rested hands on holstered sidearms, but most looked confused. His Red Corsair brother didn't move a muscle.
And what does that mean? Varial drew and fired in a single movement, the shell pounding into the Corsair's throat armor and bursting inside his neck. There wasn't even a strangled cry. One moment two Corsairs stood speaking, and the next one collapsed without a head. Several seconds later, the spinning helm came back down and clattered onto the decking with the dull clung of ceramite on metal. It means the Eighth Legion is taking this ship back. We are about to receive guests, at which point this ship must be made ready to make a brief warp jump. Anyone who opposes these actions should speak up now. I was not jesting when I said I needed a new cloak.